was a three-line whip, and there was an expectation that when the president of our country responds, members of parliament, because one of our responsibilities is to ensure that the executive accounts, therefore, were to spend time there. And in the meantime, we are also struggling with the quorum. The secretariat will advise us. But in the meantime, I'm going to suggest that the members of our committee, you fill in the attendance register. It has been circulated, but the other colleagues that have just came in now, just have a look at the attendance register and sign. Secondly, there's been a circulation of documentation. One of the documents which is important is the agenda for today. It has been circulated, and the copy of the draft bill. There's some echo here. It's not my fault. It has been circulated, and other colleagues have been here because you as members, in terms of the approved program, you invited them to be here. We'll probably request that maybe the secretariat can check the other colleagues whether in the next 5 minutes they can be here, so that we have to make a determination. But we just have to take into cognizance that people have traveled, they've managed to plan their schedules to be part of the meeting today, and we should be able to proceed. In as much as I know that honorable members had a long, long day, exhaustive day, but we'll have to find a better mechanism on how to handle our issues, so that at least there is a fairness for those who prepared for the meeting and those who joined us, but also equally so that the members of our committee remain productive, because it's also not going to be helpful if they're not productive. They look tired. It's been a long day. Comrade Secretary and Comrade Andre, advise us whether we're forming the quorum. Well, I know that Honorable McPherson, he bumped to me. I hope he has spoken to you as a secretariat, because I'm not the secretariat, where he said he's going to sneak out by 5 o'clock, or no, by 5:30. That's what he said to me. He should be here. And then Honorable Kachala should have been here, and the other members. But let's hear from our team whether do we have apologies. But I suspect we form the quorum now, with the disciplined comrades of our movement, though looking tired.
Chairperson, we do not form a quorum as yet, but we can proceed as a committee to discuss the bill, because we have more than 4 members. According to the rules, we can proceed having a discussion, but we obviously, without a quorum, we cannot make a decision. But the meeting can proceed in the interim. With regard to the apologies, the only official apology that I received was from Mrs. Fobbs, who is on party business, who is not here. I have not, Mr. McPherson didn't communicate to me yet that he will be leaving at 5:30. I have not received any other apologies.
I'm going to request that comrades, can we also check our whip, Comrade Bunganene, to join us? I don't intend the meeting to be long. I know that the team is over-prepared. They want us to go through clause by clause. But it's been a long day. It's been a long day. They will kill me. But probably before we proceed, let's just remind each other, ne? That one, we as a committee, towards the end of last month, between the 24th and the 26th of October, we had public hearings. And thank you very much to honorable members who are just coming in. And the public hearings that were held on the 24th to the 26th, we congratulated the organizations and individuals that came, including the gambling boards from provinces that came to make the presentations. And then on the 30th of October, you were able then that you received a response from the Department of Trade and Industry. Remember, there were submissions. And on the submission received on the bill, they were able to reflect to say what is their view on those issues. The reason why we do this, we don't want to be going back and forth. We need to be focused. And the issues that were raised, and even probably when you take us through the bill now, please don't be all over the show. One of the main issues was the transformation of the National Gambling Board into a national gambling regulator. And if we look at the clauses in terms of the bill, let's only focus on that, not other things. That now, if it becomes a regulator, what then becomes the essence and how does the regulator will actually work differently from the board itself? What are the empowering legislation, the major changes that have been made there? Because that's the thrust. Remember, this is a technical amendment, and we don't have to be spending too much time. And we need to be able to create an animal that is able to achieve the imperatives you sought to address. The second issue, there were only two issues. The second issue was governance challenges. One of the issues around governance challenges that came to our attention was the question of a structure called the National Gambling Policy Council, which is normally a political structure. There were complaints on governance, only two complaints, is the question of attendance and the issues of quorum. I don't want us to go all over town, comrades. If you do that, I shut you down because you don't have discipline or focus. And then if we have time, we can do other issues. Those are the main issues. You want to change the board into a regulator. Where does it actually look like in the Act? And related clauses only to that main matter. It's a substantive matter. Secondly, your governance challenges, you think that you want to regulate them. And if you wanted to regulate governance issues, firstly is the decision-making, which is quorum. And it's also the decision-making, which is attendance, failure to achieve the first one. This is where the team must be able to concentrate. Probably, then if we can actually finish those substantive issues, then other issues, we might have to make a determination, but I don't want to keep members Comrade Andre here when really they look to have a long day. Fortunately, I hope some they were not involved in issues that took some of their energies. Therefore, the other thing that happened, comrades and colleagues, is that on the same meeting, on the 30th, it was shared by Comrade Williams, Honorable Williams. We requested that the parliamentary legal advisor, they need to prepare an opinion. That's one decision you took. The opinion is to respond to, given our constitutional democracy and the need for cooperative governance, as well as the gambling being a concurrent competence, how can the national government currently exercise authority over the norms and standards it sets? Remember, there were issues, the provincial teams when they presented. They said some of these issues with due respect, there are some issues that are covered by Intergovernmental Relations Framework Act and cooperative governance in terms of the law. And where is the failure here? What does the law say? How can we perfect the issue that within the current ambit we can be able to improve the functioning? And then the question around compliance in terms of norms and standards. Number three, we just have to note that the parliamentary legal officer that was assigned to help us, unfortunately, after the meeting, a day after the meeting, there was a resignation that was received. The resignation was with immediate effect. Therefore, today we also, then the team From the secretariat requested Advocate Jenkins to come in. At the time, we know that there was an apology that was submitted for this afternoon due to prior commitment. And then now we're being advised that a written opinion is going to be received on the 12th, if you can just note that. You made a decision, you wanted an opinion. And your opinion is not going to be a written one. But then the team has made a provision for today, Comrade Whip. The provision that today we have Advocate Claude Baum, our sister, she's the senior state law advisor. She's just going to be able to give a verbal view to say the thing that you were wanting clarity. That will be the first issue you are going to receive, comrades. Then the second issue that we will do, we'll go to the bill itself. The team wanted us to go clause by clause, but I refuse as a chair. Skatele, comrades. Will DTI, DTG, you are going to only go to the clauses, only on the clause that will say, where are you changing the board into a regulator? Those related ones, only. And then you will also go straight quickly to the government's challenges you raised. Remember there was a government's issue around quorum and attendance. We'll only deal with that for today. I don't want to keep these people for long. Then the others, which were not the main thrust, because they are those who are, that are becoming subsequent. In other words, they are triggered. Then we will find a way that maybe when we look at the meeting of the 12th when Comrade Chair is around and the legal opinion is here, in the main thrust of the technical changes, we can be able to make a determination how to proceed. Is it okay, comrades? Comrade Kachala, you're still on board. Those were my opening and welcoming remarks, comrades. They try to guide you. Don't be all over the show. Can we adopt the agenda, comrades? Comrade Kachala proposes, Comrade Kadeva seconds. Now I'm going to request Advocate Grootboom, our senior state law advisor, just to respond to the matter you requested yourself as a clarity. Immediately she's done with that. If there is one or two issues you want to raise, you will raise. But take into account that on the 12th of November, a final opinion by Advocate Jenkins will be here, so that at least we conclude your decision. And then afterwards, DTG, we should not spend more than 20 minutes on the main clauses from board to regulator and governance issues. Agreed? Agreed. Mbuya? Cumulative? Agreed too. You look tired, my brother. Okay. Comrade Advocate, can you take honorable members to that?
Thank you, Chairperson, and good afternoon to everyone. Chairperson, just to give some background, we've gone through the redraft bill. And as the chair know that we have the bill that was introduced, we certified it, and we've went through the redraft bill, and we've seen that the provisions that have been retained basically carries our approval in terms of constitutionality. And when it comes to the concurrent functions, I'm just going to give like a broad perspective, not necessarily going into detail into each and every provision, just to give some type of framework in terms of how you deal with concurrent functions within the constitutional framework. I have three pointers that I put out. First is that we are a constitutional democracy, which requires that we have a rule of law and we have the supremacy of the Constitution. That means that everything that you do must be subject to the Constitution. And then second, we have this principle of cooperative governance. And when it comes to the making of legislation, Section 40 of the Constitution say that the national, the provincial, and the local government are required to cooperate with one another in mutual trust and good faith by, amongst others, coordinating the actions and legislation with one another. So you have the rule of law on the one side, which you have to comply with, and then you it's required that when you make your law, that you cooperate with one another. And then we have Schedule 4 of the Constitution, which confers concurrent functions on the national and the provincial government. And basically, the Constitution doesn't necessarily give you a perimeter in terms of how you must share that. So I think guidance can be obtained from Section 146, which basically say under which circumstances national legislation would prevail over provincial. So we looked at it from that perspective, and the particular issue that the committee required some assistance on was how do you deal with norms and standards? How do you set the norms and standards, and how do you then ensure that everyone comply with the norms and standards, including the provinces? Now, Section 146 say that when you have national legislation, if it deals with norms and standards, that the national legislation would prevail over provincial legislation. But the way in which you implement that, of course, it would mainly be a policy. It would be from a policy perspective. But bearing in mind that you do not just want to go and interfere. You want to come from a mutual and a cooperative perspective. And the current act deals with how national government will implement its norms and standards. And as it's now indicated in the long title, which basically gives you the objects of the act, is that stricter regulation is required. So for as long as you have a legitimate government purpose, in terms of which you then, of course, you can put that in your legislation. And now, as the DDG indicated, that stricter regulation is required, and this is why they're moving from having national inspectors having to go into the provinces to make sure that the provisions of the Act are being complied with. That doesn't mean that the national inspectors is going to interfere with the workings of how the provinces currently operate, because the administration of the Act, it is within the national government. And if it is to be found that one or other province is not complying, the person that will be answerable will be the minister. And you have a national regulator currently, which would not only enforce compliance through monitoring and evaluating, but also then inspections is required to make sure that the norms and standards is complied with. And therefore, I think clause 14.1J of the bill and clause 15.2, read with clauses 38 and 39, ensure that the issue of norms and standards are effectively being dealt with moving forward, Jefferson. So I hope that at least would address some of the issues that has come up regarding concurrency.
Your Excellencies and comrades, that's a legal view. In the meantime, we are also expecting that by the 12th of November, the actual opinion should be here. But there is something that should be noted, Advocate Protbom, that when the opinion comes here, we must not create a problem of probably trying to reconfirm what the Constitution say or the Intergovernmental Relations Framework Agreement, what it says. Because if you talk about concurrence, the function being performed by national but also by provinces, there must be a clear delineation, even in the law itself. There should be no ambiguity. And I think it should be very important because it will be a bad law. It will be a bad law. But that's how this concurrency things works with our little experience working in government. And it must not actually reaffirm the principles need to be reaffirmed. But in the piece of legislation, is there a clear issue to say where does the boundary start and where it ends and where there should be this collaboration, which is very important that when we're taking through the section, like we're making some reference to section 37. Are we fine with this, colleagues? Colleagues, Comrade Bunga?
Chairperson, we're fine with it. I think that the, you know, the devil is always in the details. Mm-hmm. Let's get the written one, and then we'll be able to engage with that. But we appreciate that the work has been done.
No, we are correct, Bungan. It must be able to succinctly delineate. It must. Because if it is not clear in the Act, there's going to be problems, the problem we face. And secondly, even on governance, you know this thing around governance, there's always provision how decisions get to be made. Because remember, one of the issues is the question of the National Gambling Policy Council that actually, in governance term, was non-functional. That's the term. That's the correct term. To say, looking at what is being proposed here and the other existing mechanism, both in terms of constitution and the other laws that are related to this, is it sufficiently covered? If that's what we received on the 12th, it will be able to take us forward. Should we conclude on that, comrade? Now we need to go to the bill, and I don't want us to go into too much detail. We'll try to guide you, but without limiting you. One of the main issue, colleagues, that was coming up in the bill itself is the change of the name Gambling Board, National Gambling Board, to be referred as a National Gambling Regulator. That was the main issue, to say we are changing this. Therefore, there will be related clauses to say if you do change into a regulator to regulate gambling, what does it mean in terms of those related clauses? That's one issue you raised. The other issue that you raised, the governance issues, comrades, we've spoken to now. We'll see what is being proposed, but it can only be concluded after we've got an opinion. The other issue that was also being raised by yourselves, there was a view, and it's a serious issue that you need to be able to conclude, the issue of having a chief executive office. Remember, it was one of the presentations. And then there was a question of having possible two deputies, but ultimately the department, when it presented, it says they wanted to confine themselves to only one deputy. But then there was a concern raised that people are fallible. What then becomes the checks and balances of assigning too much authority on one person, or how will be the decision-making process of a CEO look like? Therefore, when you present DDG, we need to look at that. And what then become the recourse? We're coming from a story where, from an era where there's been an abuse on trust that normally gets to be given to individuals, especially in a space like this one where there's a lot of interest. When there's a lot of interest, people can do a misstep. And if missteps are done, what do you do? The last one you raised, colleagues, remember there was an issue you raised about the capability of the regulator. The regulator to do its work, it needed tools. One of the tools was called the National Electronic Monitoring Something System. You remember that one, colleagues, ne? where they are saying, no, 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 but we do have this thing, it's already there, why don't you use the system that is already there to do those? Those were just more of the technical issues. Other honorable members, like Honorable McPherson, raise substantive issues to say, we can see this amendment that we are trying to do is more cosmetic, but there are fundamental issues that we needed to deal with, and probably how the process you want to deal with that. I will allow the DDG to take us through, but as I'm saying, let's be more focused, straight to the point, and remember there were certain notes that you circulated before, where it says some are just more kind of technical amendments, especially in Section 1, wherever you see the word board is replaced by regulator. There were a number of sections, like Section 10, 14, 16, 21, 22, 23, and a lot of them where you see the word board to be replaced by regulator. And there is also a reference to the CEO replacing the word chairperson. And then Section 27 dealing with the electronic monitoring system. DDG, if you can just take us to those related to those fewer issues, and on the basis of the discussion with honorable members, we can conclude those key issues. Are we fine, comrades? Can I have an affirmation there? DDG, Asmo.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, honorable members and stakeholders. I'm here with my colleagues from the DTI and the National Gambling Board. Chair, I'm going to try to stick to the order that you have prescribed and be more focused. And if I manage to move a bit quickly, I would like to just indicate that there were, from the public submissions that we responded to last week, there were some technical legal issues that were identified that we will be working around with the parliamentary legal colleagues. And for this presentation, we won't be going gloss by gloss as recommended by the chair. I will try to be as brief as possible, but then highlight maybe one or two additional issues that are related to the role of the regulator. I will start from page 23, where we talk to the establishment of the regulator itself. On page 23, this is the major amendment, and we are establishing a regulator that will be a public entity, and it will also be a juristic person and has jurisdiction throughout the Republic. And it will align to the Public Finance Management Act, and it will be governed by a CEO. So this is the crux of the amendment bill. And there was an additional submission proposal made that when it comes to this section, we should also talk to the independence and the impartiality of the institution. So it's one of the comments that came from the public to say we should strengthen that area. So in the presentation, we did highlight what this would look like. And going from page 24 to 25, there are some additional, especially on 25, page 25, some functions or the focus areas that the regulator will be looking into. One of them is around the socioeconomic impact of gambling. I'm highlighting it because there were some submissions that spoke to the role of the regulator when it comes to addressing problem gambling, and also emphasis made on the National Responsible Gambling Program. But then here I'm highlighting that this role, the regulator can also do it because of the challenges that we are addressing of problem gambling in the country. And on page 27 is the...
Maybe just with your colleagues, the main issue of changing a board into a regulator is clearly defined on section 64. Therefore, from page 23, 24, and until 25, until 26, at all there. I will want you to apply your mind now, because it's a major issue that was being raised. Looking at it yourselves, what is your view? We don't want, we'll still come to these other substantive issues, Honorable McPherson, you raised, but just on this idea of a regulator, how does it look like? I see Honorable McPherson, your hand is up. Any other hand?
Thank you. As I've previously stated, I don't, in principle, have a problem with a regulator. What I do have a problem with is when a regulator, may infringe on exclusive mandates of the province. Now, on page 25, GH would seem to me to be problematic in advising the consultation, advise the council in consultation with the minister on the maximum number of kind of licenses related to casinos, racing, gambling. Now, I mean, licensing and determining licensing in any form of gambling is a provincial competency, and I just wonder, DDG, whether in fact that is then not taking away the province's right to determine, because the next step would be that the minister would start determining how many licenses a province may issue for specific modes of gambling. Now, I know that in terms of casinos, that there is a maximum number of casinos nationally, and that is divided up by provinces, and provinces then issue those licenses. But may this start speaking to, if you just say gambling, I mean, that could be any mode of gambling, and how does that then relate to the province's abilities and rights to do so? I'm also would be interested in as to how the regulator is going to conduct its own education campaigns, but this is also done by other forms. I think the NLC has a education campaign, and there's the other acronym that escapes me right now, but I think it's the SA Responsible Gambling Program. So you may then start having a overlapping of responsibilities. Then I want to I don't know, Chair, if it's possible to skip forward to a specific function of the regulator, which would be found on page. If you give me a moment, I think DDG, it relates to inspections. Now that particular point here, the powers of the National Inspectorate. That's page 39, Chair, 76A. That an inspector may, with or without an inspector appointed in terms of provincial law. I mean, that seems, again, a duplication of provincial boards' responsibility of inspection and enforcement. And you may now have a situation where the regulator then goes into a province to inspect deal with gambling without the knowledge or participation of provincial boards. So I'm concerned that some of the powers and functions of the regulator may be problematic in how they speak to the exclusive mandate of provinces.
Okay, any other comment? Then I will ask the department to come through. Comrade Bungan.
Thank you.
But the purpose is, Comrade Andrew, if I say Bungani, I mean Hadev. Mungane is a clan name.
No, thank you, Chairperson. At least up to now, we are not taking any decision. We are still browsing through the issues as they reflect. But what we must deal with is the issue of the electronic monitoring mechanism. What is going to happen if the regulator finds that there's a misdemeanor in that casino, and then they raise it with the provincial board that there's something which is amiss which is going there, and the provincial board does not respond? What must happen? Must the regulator only give up like that, or must they not be given extra powers to go in? But I think what is critical here is the procedure which must be followed. So if they see anything which is wrong, they must bring it through this collaborative type of engagement, that there's something which is going on which is wrong, which must be attended to. If it is not attended to by, or it must be attended together with, and then I think it will be fine. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, honourable members, and thank you, Chair. In terms of the interference by the provincial gambling boards versus the national regulator, honourable McPherson, the number of licences. I think when we presented last week, with the numbers that we showcased from the National Gambling Board and the proliferation of gambling activities, number of gambling activities, the numbers have grown, even including the revenue itself. I think that there is a need and a strong need for oversight by national. I think a good example is around the electronic bingo terminals. As you can see, the numbers are just becoming astronomical. And as the numbers are growing, no one is really asking a question about what about the people, what about the social cost to the lives who are participating in these activities. And I think that with norms and standards that are set between the national, through the council, with the provinces, there is a need to control the numbers. And it's not necessarily about interference. It's about our oversight as government to ensure that there's a balance between the economics and the social imperatives that we need to address. And you rightfully mentioned the casinos. Imagine if we could allow the numbers to just increase. How many casinos can we have in every street of this country? So I think that there is a need for control and some level of balance when it comes to how much gambling we allow in the nation. And with an intergovernmental framework with provinces and national, there will be that negotiation in terms of what should be taking place versus what should not be. But truly, we don't see this as, when we talk about the regulator, we don't see this as something that says that the regulator must control and overtake the provincial responsibilities. But there is a need for control of the numbers, because as it is, without that control, we are going to have a problem in the country. And currently, we do have already in other modes that are not being controlled. And we don't have that access to ensure that we put a stop or we limit the numbers. When it comes to the responsible gambling program, we think that is this an overlap? The National Gambling Regulator has a responsibility to play when it comes to problem gambling and ensuring that there are existing programs to control the, to come up with different programs to address this. And I think currently, my colleagues will speak to this, but they do have initiatives to address problem gambling in different respects. And we don't think they are enough. So the more there are other partnerships and other stakeholders participating in this role, the better. So I think that we don't see overlaps. We see complementarities, and we think that problem gambling must be addressing it should be supported, and the gambling regulator must come into that space as a regulator, also from an oversight perspective. In terms of inspections, we heard last week about When does the gambling board currently come in when it comes to inspections? They come in by invitation. They don't have a mandate. And because they don't have a mandate, we think that there is a need to combat the existing levels of illegal gambling that is taking place in the country. And we do not see this role as interference per se. We think that there is a need for the regulator to be able to go to any province if need be to intervene when necessary. And we think that if they can work together, the provinces and national, will have a stronger enforcement when it comes to addressing illegal gambling and other enforcement-related issues. I gave an example last week of communities or stakeholders who find themselves stuck. They have problems with the challenges in the province. You are a punter, you have an issue with the game that you played, and then you don't know where to go. Because many punters are stuck. They can be assisted by the provincial regulators sometimes. They run to national, but national does not have any powers to assist them. So we think that the measures that are being put in place are there to support the players, to ensure that there's a fair and a balanced environment. And not only that, to ensure that there is enforcement that is strengthened. Currently, we talk about illegal internet cafes. We talk about different modes of gambling activities that we cannot really control. So why not increase capacity in the country by having a regulator that can also play a role when it comes to enforcement and inspectorate? It's a serious gap, and we think that the regulator must be empowered to play that role. And on the one about the electronic monitoring systems, Honorable Khadebe, you are correct. There is a need to empower the regulator to be able to come in and intervene if they pick up any challenges with these with activities by the other provinces. I think there should be that oversight. It's necessary because those will come in from time to time. So I'm going to request, Chair, if the gambling board the administrator can come in and just add to the issue.
No, let's manage it differently. If you see what we're doing now, we'll have a temptation to respond to all other issues. You see what we're missing the point here. Chairman, Comrade Bungana, must try to get you focused. You know what Honorable McPherson is raising? Honorable McPherson is raising a principal issue. A principal issue to say the determination of the number of these licenses that could be issued. Then there is an issue that was being raised that there are certain licenses that are being issued by provinces. That's what we got, remember. Therefore, it's an issue that you need to clarify in the law in terms of concurrence. What kind? Remember, you also said that provinces are also issuing those that are supposed to be issued by national language. That's what you presented. The most important issue, these are issues around concurrence. You look at, is it what, this one? Is on page 25A, is it H, no? And it's also 25M. Who must do what between national and provincial? Then we can allow the administrator then to respond on those, because those are the ones we raised. Then the issue that Honorable Hatebe raises is the issue that indeed the regulator must be in a position to monitor. It must have a tool. But the question is to say to what extent that they should do that function at the very same time, to what extent will also provinces do that. Those are the issues that Advocate Crotbaum, they are more close about this tension that normally happens when functions are performed at different levels. And if you are not succinctly saying who starts from what point to what point, where does someone else come, it becomes a question of a term. And then there's going to be an inherent tension. Can we focus on that? Let's allow that.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. I'll just directly focus on the current wording of the National Gambling Act. I'll start with the powers of the province. Honourable MacPherson had indicated whether the maximum, the minister having powers to issue maximum number of any kind of license is, whether it's an encroachment on provincial legislation, I mean provincial licensing authorities' powers. You may not have the current act before you. In Section 30, the powers of the provincial licensing authority with regards to the exclusive jurisdiction pertaining to licenses is only to investigate, consider applications. The second is conduct inspections to ensure compliance, impose licensing administrative sanctions, and then issue offense notices in respect of offenses. And then the Act clearly stipulates, so this is where there's a clear delineation in terms of what national and province does. The Act gives exclusively that power to the minister to set maximum number of licenses. And maximum number of licenses does not mean we are determining what provinces can on year license, but it's just to cap the figure. And then from a socio-economic aspect, Section 45 also clearly gives that power to the minister to even alter the maximum number. However, it's always subject to addressing the incidence and social consequences of compulsive and addictive gambling, promoting BEE or promoting new entrants to the industry, job creation, diversity of ownership, efficiency and operation of the gambling industry, and issues of competition. So that is something that has been uncontested, and it has not been an issue. With regards even specifically the LPMs, it has not been a matter of contention. Provinces ordinarily conduct socio-economic impact studies even before they decide to roll out machines or further license. So that is something that happens, and when they get to the threshold that minister has set in the regulations, then minister is to consider socio-economic impact research studies as to the dynamics of each province and then what gets rolled out. So in our view, as it stands currently and what is proposed, we don't see any challenge even from an implementation perspective. I think I'll just leave it there.
No, thanks, colleagues. I think if you read the Act itself and the proposed amendment, in other words, there's not been any change. There's no change. But then the issue, it might be implementation challenges where someone oversteps and someone does that. In principle, members are not opposed to the idea of a regulator, but if you read well, the objectives and the functions that are being given to the regulator, if you read the Act and the proposed amendments, there is no change there. Probably we just have to put that for record purposes so that you don't have problems, colleagues. I was trying to read myself very quickly. And then the delineation between what the provinces ought to do and the National Gambling Board, which is now a regulator, there's still a clear distinction, except that the question of norms and standards, that might have to be determined from time to time in a form of regulation has to come in. The question of socio-economic impact assessment is that the license can't just be issued arbitrarily because there's a commercial sense of it, but there are also issues of social impact, a impact on communities on the negative part. The one that you raised, Honorable MacPherson, the one around civic education, I could see that it's coming up. Let's just be able to note from an implementation point of view, because you see that what kind of other elements or a administrator want to do. But if you read those two colleagues, there has not been a movement. except the main movement, which is the naming, which is the nomenclature. Are you okay? Agreed to. Now we go to governance.
Thank you, Chair. So I will move from the other functions, for example, the CEO and the Deputy CEO on page 27. So that talks to how the CEO is appointed and other governance issues related to the CEO. And then the functions of the CEO is on page 29, that is section 65B. And then on page 30, we have the committee of the National Gambling Regulator. This committee is a committee that was recommended when the bill was finalized to say that it needs to be there to cover the issue of the independence of having a CEO. So there will be this committee that the minister may from time to time establish, and that will also have functions that will be a support to the regulator when it comes to certain decisions and functions. So this is an additional the committee that will be from a governance point of view there to assist the regulator with decision making and ensuring that the independence is addressed. And I think maybe just to talk to the issue of the CEO as the independent individual, we as a department did the entity rationalization process or project that recommended that for institutions like the regulator, we don't necessarily have to have a board structure in order for it to be effective. And we have examples currently with our entities like the National Credit Regulator that are functioning with CEOs and mandate in consultation with the minister, and they are effective. So this is not unique to the regulator. And Chair, I will go to the issue of the quorum.
Let's just wait here, colleagues. From a governance point of view now they are introducing that the regulator from time to time will work with the committee. And now you need to do a reflection as members. It's an important issue. I see the hand of Honorable Bungane. Any other hand? Okay, that's the only hand we'll take at this stage. Comrade Bungane.
Chairperson, I think that we have to note that the committee might be able to be a check and balance system on the side of the regulator. Because in one way or the other, sometimes to have this person with all the power in him or her might not be okay. But what is very important is that we also acknowledge that the CEO will be working together with, or the regulator will be working together with the minister. So sometimes these committees are used to investigate certain issues. That's why I like the aspect which say that the minister can appoint a committee for a certain period of time. It might be for a particular intervention. So I think that it is something was worth considering in moving forward.
Okay, just noting that this is just more about governance rationalization. It's not a unique thing, they've done it before.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe the DG can explain to us the role that is played by this committee in other institutions. Because I wouldn't be comfortable if it is only called in for certain decisions. And for me, it doesn't make any difference if most of the time this independent CEO will take decisions on his own. So can she explain exactly? Is the CEO going to work alone full-time, but you will at some point on certain decisions call the committee? So there's no difference ukuthi lo CEO is working is on his own. He can take whatever decision, but only things that he feels he must call the committee. He may. I am not comfortable with that.
Maybe, comrades, if the question that have been asked, if you could read the limited powers, because they are clearly defined, the powers of the CEO, comrades, on page 2965B2. There are only five responsibility given to the CEO now. And then they say that the CEO will report directly to the minister on the issues that are referred there. It's more about accounting. You remember the issues around PFMA, ne? May I want to come raise? No. Because I'm trying to assist. I'm saying, no. Let me assist first. Because you'll be lost. I'm saying page 29, colleagues, the reason of having the CEO, it has everything to do with having an accounting officer in terms of the PFMA. And subsection 2 of 65B clearly defines what are these accounting officers' role that are normally generic in terms of the PFMA. Then there is an authority, executing authority. It would have been very nice when Nenze is schematic diagram, like Comrade Matashe say, how they relate. Then they say they report to the minister in terms of A and B that is given there. Then there is an introduction of the committee. And the committee, if you look at it, U2 says how it will actually be composed. And then the timelines that are there and how they cease. Then DDG, you can try to respond. But I think how, from a governance point of view, if you can do a small mapping, how does it look like? Remember, you have these provinces, you have these other structures, ultimately the National Gambling Policy Council. Sometimes if we do that schematic thing, it looks much readable. Lerato, Comrade Lerato, Mrs. K.
When I take time to understand, you know, that's why you're explaining. Thanks, Jay. The issue of a committee, I agree, I understand. But however, it means each and every time it's a committee or it's an ad hoc committee, because there I don't understand, because that committee, is it a permanent committee or is it a committee when is it necessary, when there's a problem that the minister must appoint? Meaning we need to know which committee is this one. And ad hoc, because I know ad hoc is when there's a problem, you appoint for a temporary. But this committee, is it a full-time committee with terms? And for how long? That's what where I'm lost, Chair.
Honourable MacPherson.
It would be very helpful if we could understand, as an example, what specified, what a committee may consider in terms of, you know, as an example, why would they need to have a committee? I'd like to have an example of what the committee would do. Is it to consider what color the new curtain should be, or is it a policy decision? You know, what is the function of the committee? Because quite frankly, if you start establishing committees like this, you start creating a parallel structure to the executive function of the regulator. So I'm concerned about that. And when we say, you know, a committee must be, a member of the committee must be impartial, a fit and proper person. I mean, we've had many people that have come into various functions of government and have proven not to be fit and proper. And so, you know, I would, you know, caution around creating committees where we allow a political decision or a political person to be appointing people on the basis of fit and proper, because that is subjective, quite frankly, in the political function. So if a committee, an ad hoc committee, needed to be appointed, I would argue that it should be the regulator or the CEO that should actually be appointing people that may complement the work for a specific reason. Now, I also want to use another example of where these so-called committees have been abused. You will recall in SASA that so-called work streams, you know, were created, and those, quite frankly, were abused, and no deliverable outcomes were ever brought up. So this, for me, is very opaque, it's very fuzzy, and I'm actually not sure what the end goal of these committees may be.
No, thanks. I think, colleagues, you might want to respond, but immediately the law is not specific. It creates a room for any other business, a general deal. It becomes problematic. This thing, from a structural point of view, DDG, is clear. You have the minister, the regulator, the CEO reports to the minister, clearly defined. If the minister wants to acquire and expect knowledge because there's a specific issue, a minister can appoint a service provider or technical people just to bring them on board, whoever, really, because you'll have the problem to say what kind of an example, what are the specific things that when you actually start to come with this committee you have in mind, like Honorable Mantashe was asking, because it must be specific in terms of dealing with certain issues. Whether some of these capacity for certain things that the regulator must discharge must not reside with the regulator. It's the regulator as a body. Is there something you want to guide us? But we don't see a rationale for this committee. It's just if technical advice must be sought, the minister is empowered to source it in whatever way. But the committee seems like it's creating a structure that the relationship nifuna ukuthini niyabezwa labantu abahloniphekile ukuthi bathi niyagalela nje yabo. I don't know English. We are creating a quasi board. I'm advising, Pella must be advised here. It's quasi something.
Thank you, honorable members. Chair, the NGR had a board before, and if you have, even from the public submissions and the public hearings, you heard the outcry about the independence of having a CEO that is addressing issues that also may impact on provinces. And I think it is for that reason that the committee structure that is not...
DG, let's correct it. You see, the function of the CEO, colleagues, are clearly defined. They are clearly defined. Let's not go there. Because if you go there, we are also going to create some impression now. You see, this, the members are saying to you, you want to create a structure. You don't have an idea in mind of the concrete example as we stand now of the things they will do. If you want the structure to remain, you better start to give some of these specific things that they can look at. It can't be an open-ended. We can't give you a blank check. If you have the idea of the key areas that the committee can do, let's do them now to know the applicability. And if we have no idea at this stage, let's not give a blank check. PDG and then the administrator.
Chair, I would say because we have the committee in the bill, and I was trying to give a rationale behind it, but I would request that perhaps we can come back on this one when they come back with the legal opinion next week, so we can look into this just to give it a better approach and just a clearer response.
There is no rejection of the committee itself, but the issue that the committee must be able to clearly define the scope, the nature of things that can be referred, and let's allow you to come back by the 12th. Now we're going to the quorum. No, the matter is closed, comrades. Anish? Yeah, they are coming back. Come back more comprehensive. No, Comrade Mbuyan, you have your hand up. Angus? Kuluma, the Chief.
No, thanks, Chair. I wanted to give the department a package. Whether, because they said it's a committee that is part-time. You see, they can also check that if the committee is part-time, then the CEO is alone there. If the committee is full-time, maybe it will be assisted by the committee, whether it's ad hoc or whatsoever, but it must be something like that. Thanks, Chair.
No, it's fine. You are noting it, but there is a structure for the whole regulator, CEO, deputy, and others. We are going to page 23, colleagues. Comrades, can we be together? Now we need to finish. We are going to quorum. At the top, 63A. 23. There is nothing wrong going back. Now we are on governance. We are finished with the regulator. That the idea of the regulator, in principle, it's okay. The idea that there is a CEO reports directly to the minister, it's agreed to. The only issue, this kind of a committee, one time it emerges, the other time it disappears. That's what APC is and McPherson, and what do they do? If you know what they will do, we'll engage. If you don't, yeah. Comrades, this one is self-explanatory. Any view? Yeah, for any decision, while believing in democracy, it must be taken by majority. Do you have problems with that? Honorable McPherson?
Thanks, Chair. I'd actually like to have a discussion about whether the policy council is in fact actually relevant, and whether there is a need for a policy council any longer. I would argue that it may not be relevant anymore, and in fact what it should be moved to is more of a MinMec type a discussion where the minister and MECs meet on a quarterly basis, and things can be tabled to that specific body. So that would be a particular point. If the idea is to continue with the policy council, then, you know, to have the status quo remain is a challenge, because it clearly is a mechanism to render the body non-corporate and to stall any discussions that may be required to be had. So, I mean, these are the tough realities that exist in this body. Should a decision just be made with, two or three people after two tries, I'm not sure that that's good for anyone. So, I actually think what actually needs to be understood is what are the desired outcomes of the Policy Council, DDG? Can those be restructured to be taken or discussed in another forum? If not, well then, we then need to look at how to make this Policy Council work. But I would actually like to ask, what are the desired outcomes? And is there in fact a need for a Policy Council any longer?
Well, probably the question of the quorum, I don't think we have issues. It's the majority. That's why they're putting it 5, because provinces are 9. It's 4 plus 1, which is 50% plus 1, which is 5. It's just a given matter. Then there's a fundamental issue Honorable McPherson is raising. You might want to do a reflection yourselves. But if you want to reflect on the matter, remember we've given an advice that we need an opinion. The Policy Council, in as much it is more about the nomenclature, the definition, is the naming, I mean. But in reality, it is composed in a form of a min-mac. But the only is a min-mac in as much as in provinces you don't have a nomenclature called Departments of Trade and Industries. It's normally Ministers for Economic Development and others, whatever the nomenclature is. But if you read the Principal Act is very clear what are their functions. There's no change. And it's also more about promoting intergovernmental relations, but it's also more about cooperative governance. If you look at it, in reality, because if you read 61, the composition, you go to 62, the functions, in the main, the function A to F, they are more about policy setting, it's more about policy coherence, so that you don't send different issues. But also is to oversee the work, politically oversight, which is your two. Then the meetings, in the meetings we've added that issue of the quorum now. Can I allow other members just to have a take on the view Honorable McPherson has raised? Then we'll allow the department, then we conclude. Comrade Mkwat, then Comrade Bungan.
The reason why we keep him quiet, Che, is because the whip of the majority party said we will look into these things. So we don't want to come later on to say no, we add in such an area. So we want to be given an opportunity to at least, digest and reflect on this matter. We can't take decisions now because there's a lot of changes from the main act. So we can't. I don't want to contradict some people who have spoken here. I have a capacity to do that, but I don't want to. That's why I'm keeping quiet.
It feels like now we are a soft word leadership. Comrade Punga.
Chairperson, I think the issues which are raised by Honorable McPherson are valid. But as you said, that it is very clear that in the Act as currently standing, there are clear tasks which must be done by the Policy Council, of which I think that it would be very premature of us to try to clip it away. But what must happen is that there are issues, as you said, that cooperative governance, just like what is going to happen if the provinces want an extra license to be in, because things, they change, the situation change. So what must happen is that the authority which provides that is what is the department, the ministry is on the other side. So I think that let us not delve to it as it is. Let us just allow the department to respond, and then we'll come back to it.
Guys, do you want to respond?
Chair, I think with the approach you took to outline what the council is about, you have covered that question. It is needed and it is necessary.
No, it's needed. That's why I was saying, Honourable McPherson, just do some of your homework and see how do you assist the committee. Remember, it could have been called a MINMEC, but the real configuration of national government and the provincial government is a little bit different. There is no Department of Trade and Industry in provinces. And in the main, the Minister of Trade and Industry is piggybacking on some of the functions that are done by the Minister of Economic Development, sometimes small business. That's why the word is council. But in the main, it still performs the same main tenets of our constitution. Promote cohesion, cooperative governance, intergovernmental relation, the thrust is still the same. It's still the same if you read the main act. Probably to try to change the nomenclature might be legally be on a thin ice, because it's not so definitive like other min-macs that you will do. Can we conclude on that one? Yes, my chief.
If you say so, will an ordinary person understand that it will work like a min-mac? Because it is not set in the act. And we develop legislation so that every person, every Jack and Jill could be able to understand what we mean when we write bills. If it is not explanatory in the bill, when you know what it means, but an ordinary person on the street doesn't.
No, it's fine. Probably look at the question of definitions. The members are coming closer to help us, but without changing the substantive reason why it's there. Okay, what towards closure? How are we closing? One, there is a legal opinion that is supposed to be received on the 12th of this month, which is next week. That's one. The legal opinion is trying to deal with the issues around governance, concurrence, those other issues, so that at least the question of norms and standards are not problematic. But in the main act itself and the proposed amendment, there is a clear role of provincial licensing authorities and the national one, clearly defined. That's one. Number two, there is a question of the committee. That probably the issue of the committee in the main, what are these specific functions? What do you have in mind within the industry itself? And then the question, Comrade Mbuyane, you have raised, whether they should be there for a particular period or not. Probably the last option is to say, normally from time to time when you work, either as a regulator or as a minister, there will be a time when you pull certain expertise together. They will come in specific period, they will advise on certain things. That's what we looked at. Then the issues of the national electronic monitoring system, an important tool, but how far does it go and how does it piggyback on the other existing one, so that at least there is more kind of optimization, that's the right English word, optimization, so that we can avoid the issues of conflicts that we'll have. And when we have those, because these were the main issues that were raised, the quorum issue is not an issue. The question of a regulator, the technical amendment, is not an issue. Then on the basis of that, you can then be in a position as a committee then to look at the whole issue clause by clause. But the committee will not escape the view that there are still major issues in the actual gambling environment. The DA has raised the matter sharply, and the ANC, you have some views on the other issues. You will have to give a signal how to deal with those other issues, but in the main, we are looking at this phase one. That's how we'll conclude this item. There is an item, comrades, you have not put in, Comrade Kachala, here. We might have to be reminded of our program tomorrow. And remember, also tomorrow is the three-line whip. And you yourselves as members of this committee, we have an important task that we have to get the executive to account. There are questions you're asking, and we don't want to be doubly booked so that our work can be planned well. I'm just going to request the secretariat just to remind us of the program. You have a few minutes of reflection so that we don't have problems with the program. Can I close the Gambling Act? Agreed to? Agreed. Program? Can we look at the program quickly, Comrade Andre? We are not taking apologies now, we are still looking at the program. You know, Comrade Mrs. K, she's just trying to put an apple.
Chairperson, with regard to tomorrow's program, we are dealing with the Copyright Amendment Bill. And as the members indicated last week, because of the questions to the economic cluster, the scheduling of the gambling is not going to happen because of the three-line whip in the House tomorrow afternoon. So we're only meeting tomorrow morning from 9 till 1 in room V119. And then we'll probably meet, we also meet on Thursday at 2 o'clock to deal with the submissions on the Performance Protection Amendment Bill, the additional clauses that committee advertised. And we'll continue with that deliberations on Friday morning as well. The next meeting on gambling will be then on the 14th of November.
Maybe let's get the colleagues, you hear what they are proposing tomorrow and Thursday and Friday. Let me take hands. Comrade Lerato, okay, I see Comrade Lerato, then Honorable Mafesen, and then Honorable Bungan.
Sure, it's been a long week, and I'm apologizing for tomorrow. I say no apology, meaning let's agree that on Friday maybe we can squeeze it next week, Tuesday or some other day. If there's something, unless it's copyright, we can deal with it tomorrow. I can apologize from the labor, it's fine. But Friday, sure, no. Can you get something, another date?
Honorable Professor.
You know, Chair, since you've been there, you know, we've been very accommodating for you. So it's important that you can accommodate us as and I agree with the Honorable Tiako with respect to Friday. It is a challenge. I know a number of us have party events, campaign events, etc. I unfortunately won't be here tomorrow. I've got a long-standing commitment that I have to be at. So I will submit it formally to the secretariat. But the Honourable Kachalia will be here as well.
Okay, comrades, it's okay. You know what? Let's do this. Let the secretariat take your comments. My view tomorrow, if the team can tonight circulate the bill. Remember, tomorrow we're going clause by clause. We're not approving, but we're going through clause by clause tomorrow. Remember the legal opinion, we're getting it now when? The constitutionality.
We're getting that on the 13th of November. So next Tuesday we'll get the legal opinion.
But tomorrow we'll push the copyright, conclude the issues of clause by clause, then we'll request that we receive the legal opinion on time, all parties, so that at least when the report is ultimately coming here for consideration, we are okay. Then there's a request that Friday they are appealing these members. They've been hard working, Comrade Chief Whip. What are you saying? Comrade Whip.
Chairperson,
It is illegal in the Committee of Trading Industry to skip Friday. but Chairperson, on a very thorough note, on a clear note, Chair, I think that these issues which they are raising are valid. The issue that, as the President was in the caucus this morning, we are expected to do something every weekend at a party political level. But I think what must happen is that let them, the issue which was supposed to have been addressed on Friday, it will not be accommodated the other week because we're still waiting for legal opinions and all those things.
Can I suggest what we do, colleagues, because I'll still be chairing until Thursday? No, comrades, what we'll do, tomorrow we'll conclude the other one. Thursday afternoon, you can leave Friday morning earliest. What we'll do on Thursday, please, the Secretariat, help us. Package the things well, because remember now, you send this thing out to communities, it's coming back. The manner you have handled the other issues, if you can actually have that focus, the manner these comrades are progressive and focused, they will be able to conclude earlier on Thursday. Yeah, we will not have a difficult comrades. Let's say Friday, we go and do the other work that you are supposed to do. Hey, fella, say go accommodate you to funan boat. Oh, you want to be here Friday? Okay, thanks. It's fine. We'll be here Friday then. Happy opposite.
Sounding like another chair.
Comrades, the meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much. I'll see you tomorrow.